specific areas of due diligence. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So following up on our podcast about due diligence generally, the basics, let's drill down into specific areas. And first of all, I should mention, if you happen to be in a law firm where your practice group has a just particular niche of clients, let's say energy companies, you're probably going to develop diligence expertise that might be different than if, let's say, the clients really came from all different kind of industries, or of course a different industry altogether like the retail industry. But what would you say, John, overall are the four hottest areas of diligence right now?
Well, I think you've touched on it. A lot of it depends on the nature of the business. I mean, the answer to that question is going to be different for somebody in the oil and gas industry versus somebody that's in the banking industry. But there are also a lot of areas of commonality. And, I think contracts are always looked at very closely, as are compensation arrangements, employee benefit obligations, taxes, regulatory issues, IP, litigation, contingencies, et cetera. Anything that goes to valuation is very important. People look at financial statements and accounting practices very closely. They look at EBITDA. They look at deductions and add-backs that will come into play post-deal. They spend a lot of time thinking about integration planning. I think you always pay very close attention to contingent liability, since these don't always show up on the balance sheet, and they can be difficult to quantify. But, what matters most depends on the nature of the business. If you're buying a tech company, then its IP portfolio may be the most important part of the due diligence. If you're doing a metal bender, it may be much less significant, and environmental concerns or union contracts, what have you, may be much more prominent in your due diligence.
So let's drill down. What about intellectual property due diligence?
Well, there are a couple things that you're really trying to accomplish with IP due diligence. And by the way, let me just back up here. In doing a diligence where you're dealing with substantive areas that aren't your areas of expertise, you're going to be relying on subject matter experts. I mean, this is why your firm has IP lawyers. This is why your firm has real estate lawyers or environmental lawyers. They assist in this due diligence process. You're going to be involved in it too, but they're the subject matter experts, and many of those folks have a lot of experience in dealing with transactional issues, as well as litigation or prosecution of patents and other intellectual property. But so you're going to be coordinating with subject matter experts when you're doing this kind of due diligence. And for what you're looking for is, that the company, make sure the company has the right to use what it needs to conduct its business, that you have some certainty of continuing to be able to use that IP or identifying areas where you don't have that certainty, and that there aren't any infringement issues. You want to ensure that all the relevant registrations have been obtained or applications are on file for them and are up to date with the relevant filing office. You want to review the chains of title, from the inventor or the author or whoever originated the intellectual property in question, confirm appropriate assignment documents have been executed and recorded if necessary, identify any encumbrances like security interests or liens on those assets, any contracts involving the grant of IP licenses or the right to use or control them must also be reviewed pretty closely to identify any restrictions. Licenses can be tricky, particularly with respect to patent licenses, because these are one of the areas where there's not necessarily a presumption that those things are assignable freely if there's not a non-assignability clause in them. So you want to be sure that you have the ability to take the rights under those contracts, and that it's in fact laid out in the document, so you've got some certainty about that. Or if it's not, to flag that. Infringement issues can be very, very big. If you're infringing, you could be facing up to treble damages, and past couple of years, the courts have become increasingly plaintiff-friendly when it comes to treble damage actions and what needs to be established to show them. The Supreme Court also recently loosened the standard for treble damages last year, and then this year it eliminated latches as a defense. So plaintiffs can now lie in the weeds for up to 6 years. And there was a practice, I think, not necessarily overt, but kind of a sense among buyers that, somebody sent us a letter several years ago complaining about it, but there was nothing, there was no follow-up, there was no litigation filed alleging infringement. No news is good news would be the position. I think people are less sure about that these days. So there are a lot of things to keep in mind as you do IP due diligence.
And here's a hot one. How about cybersecurity?
Yeah, it's very hot, and I think it's one that people are still struggling to get their arms around. You know, it's very scary out there. I mean, you see these things. You know, I posted something on Deal Lawyers or Corporate Counsel, one of our blogs, a few weeks ago, that basically said what people are saying is, if you were a company, you have been hacked, you just haven't found it yet, which is a scary thing to think about. So there are all sorts of security and privacy mandates that all the developed countries in the world have and are continuing to refine. The threats continue to emerge. There's something new each week. There was, you know, recently, as we're recording this, a ransom, you know, the WannaCry ransomware attack is still being sorted out. As with any diligence effort, the scope's going to depend on the transaction timeline as well as what industry your target's in, how important the digital assets are to it, the regulatory environment, its risk profile, you know, looking at reports of vulnerability assessments, penetration testing, vendor audits, any remedial efforts that were taken, you see what they've got in terms of incident response plans and incident reports. What you're trying to assess in many respects is how far up the learning curve they are. This is a relatively new area, and a lot of companies are still struggling with cyber governance. So you look at things that how they're dealing with managing vendor cybersecurity practices. What kind of indemnification arrangements do they have? They have cyber insurance. What's that policy look like? Have they had any incidents? And how they address those incidents? I think this is also an area where you're going to want to retain your own experts to test network security and kind of look into what their practices have been. Some folks even suggest surfing the dark web to see if any of their data turns up, which would indicate that they've been hacked in some fashion. So this is still very much an evolving area. I think it's one of the most active areas we have, Brock, on our sites in terms of new information being shared by law firms in client memos. And you know, it's we have a lot of them on the sites, and I think we'll just have a lot more in the next months and years as this continues to become a higher priority for people doing deals.
Yeah. So what about oldie but goodie environmental?
Yeah, you know, if you spend your time buying and selling manufacturing businesses like those of us in the Midwest do, environmental due diligence is a big issue in almost any deal. You need to understand any hazardous materials that are used in the company's business. You need to, and almost any industrial business will use them. How do you store them? Where do you store them? How do you dispose of them? Have you been disposing of them in compliance with legal requirements? Do you have any legacy liabilities that you have to take into account? It's really a very broad area, and it's very expensive. I mean, cleaning up this stuff, it costs a lot of money, and it can really impact the valuation of the deal. So you always will want to be looking at the real estate that's involved in the transaction. The baseline thing that you'll do is everybody will have a phase one site assessment that gets conducted. That's really, you know, not a very dramatic thing. You basically provide an overview of environmental conditions at a site by looking at public records, inspecting the site, you know, kind of basically walking the site, interviewing the owners, the occupants of the site. And if that identifies any concerns, then you often will follow that up with a phase two, which is a much more detailed environmental investigation. And that's, you know, will involve soil samples. It may involve an awful lot of work directly on the site itself in order to test and see if there is contamination, help you set baseline conditions, see what they are before you acquire the site, and basically just reduce the amount of certainty that's associated with it. Now, there may be other, you know, depending on the nature of the facilities, et cetera, there may be asbestos issues that you may need to look into. There may be clean air compliance. A company may have permits that have been slapped on it for environmental matters. You want to make sure that they are in compliance with their permitting. So there's a regulatory side of this that needs to be looked at as well. So, you know, this is it's very important because, you know, environmental issues are one of those things that even if you're an asset buyer, you've really got to be aware of them because this is one of those areas where successor liability is a little bit looser than you might think at common law under these federal environmental statutes. So just because you're buying assets doesn't mean you're not going to get tagged with environmental liabilities as a successor. So due diligence in this area is very, very important.
And then, of course, the oldest one, but goodie, but contract review.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, that's basically the bundle of rights that let a business function, right? I mean, your contract rights are kind of core to what capitalism is all about. So when you're doing contract review, take the time to think through about what matters to a buyer. Don't just flip through pages of reps and warranties and get bogged down in the details of indemnification. What matters? How long is the contract for? What are its pricing terms? Are they fixed or do they adjust? Are there any limitations on the ability of either party to conduct business, any restrictive covenants, non-compete arrangements that are going to go with the business that you're going to have to be mindful of? Are there minimum purchase requirements, take-or-pay provisions? Is there a change of control provision that's going to be triggered by the deal? What are the costs to get out of the contract if you need to do that? Are there continuing obligations like indemnification that will survive go on post-termination? Those are all things that go to valuation potentially, and those are the kind of things that you should focus on in a contract, not necessarily getting into the reps and warranties and delivery schedules, et cetera, but the economics of the contract and the liability exposure that the contract creates.
Good stuff. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.